There's a gleam, man. There's a gleam.
Championship swagger. Everybody.
Championship swagger, dog.
Thank you so much.
Zone with Jason Anderson, weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
With the luminous moves, bored in this limits, let me get it like, wow, it's like right now.
Marco, I'm going to need you to turn down your talk back over there. That's how we're going to start the zone today. I am deaf. Is Nate Bucati okay? Are his eardrums okay? What happened? Welcome into the zone. I'm not Jason Anderson. Woo! Congratulations. You're welcome. I'm sorry. Whatever feelings you're feeling, they're all valid. Marco Marquez running the show today. He is currently, I have to pray to God in heaven, adjusting the volume of the audio whenever he talks directly to us. It is so much better what you have right now. Better. It just came through like I was like my head was inside of the engine of a fighter plane. But we're good now. The other voice you heard screeching in pain is Rudy Salazar. So
that'll wake you up, man.
It really will, dude. I hadn't cracked open my G fuel yet, but I'm not sure I need it anymore because I can. I'm talking at a normal volume, right? This is what I usually sound. That probably is what I usually sound like to most people. Welcome into the zone. It's true. I'm Joshua Briscoe, Rudy Salazar, Marco Marquez. Beards McFly will come tag in for Marco in a couple hours. And we've got a whole bunch to talk about today. I didn't really consider this too much before the actual weekend came around. Because I knew that, obviously, we have a Chiefs game now. It is Chiefs week. There is a real regular season Chiefs game, and we will not have to be without NFL football again until February, and hopefully not without Chiefs football until February, bye week, and hopefully a first-round bye week notwithstanding. But so we obviously have that to look forward to, which I'm very excited about. I haven't done any radio in the last several days because I took a few shows off this week, and so I haven't gotten to talk about the two biggest stories that I think, honestly, are with apologies to the college football teams, nothing is more important right now to me.
Kentucky football?
Than Kentucky football.
It's our year. I think we want Bama.
Then Tyrann Mathieu testing positive for COVID and Willie Gay Jr. going to the injured reserve. I think those are two
LSU SEC guys.
Because it just means more.
Just means a little more.
Those two injuries / questionable availabilities are enormously important for this game this week. That might seem obvious, but I think at least for Willie Gay Jr., I'm going to take some time over the course of today's show to try to explain why that one is making me really uncomfortable, specifically this week. But really, the Chiefs open Browns, Ravens, Chargers, and those are three really, really, really tough weeks for Willie Gay Jr. to be missing. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, we're obviously operating on a curve with Willie Gay where we're kind of assuming that he was going to make a big jump. But man, everything we saw in camp, stuff we saw in the preseason, it really seemed like that was going to be the direction for him. And here's sort of a little teaser, because I want to cover a bunch of things real quick throughout this first segment before we dig in over the rest of the show. At 10:30, we'll talk more KU football with Scott Chasen of 24/7 Sports and Fog.net. KU got a dub. KU won a football game. Yeah. It was genuinely hard to watch, but KU won a football game. So we'll talk to Scott Chasen about some more of that here in a little while. Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest will join us at 11. A lot more Chiefs then. Andy Reid has his press conference coming up a little after noon today. So we'll talk to we won't talk to Andy Reid. We'll hear from Andy Reid. I'll be here still. We'll hear from Andy Reid about 12:30-ish today. And then Mick Schaefer of KSHB 41. That's the order, right? It's call letters, then number now. I want to get their rebranding right.
Yeah.
Mick Schaefer will join us for the last hour of the show here on this Labor Day. So, Marco, good tweet as well. You can, you know what? Here's something I haven't done in a while. If maybe you're hearing us for the first time or you are not, you know, deeply familiar with our particular brand of radio stink here, you can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Rudy is at Not That Rudy. And Marco is at Marco Taquito 2, where you can see a really good tweet that he just had. I'm not going to explain it to you, though, because I want you to follow him. I retweeted it, though, at JB Briscoe, probably the easiest way to go about it. So there's all of our guest plans. I'll circle back on Willie Gay Jr. here in a second and why specifically these 3 weeks for him to miss are really bad. It's never a good time to lose your most athletic, explosive linebacker. But if it would have happened, I don't know, partway through the season instead of right now, it probably would have helped. But again,
if he was going to miss 3 weeks, week 6 through 8 looks not taxing.
Yeah, 6 through 8 would have been pretty good. Yeah. You got the Titans in there, and you know, the specific thing that I'm worried about that I am still withholding. I don't know why, because I'm trying to get that TSL, that sweet, sweet time spent listening. The specific thing that I really think Willie Gay Jr. has a chance still to be a solution for this Chiefs defense is something that the Browns and Chargers are going to try to exploit if they've got 7 functioning brain cells left in those organizations, which I imagine they do. That, you know, the Washington football team, Washington maybe a little bit, but Washington / Titans / Giants / Packers would not be great. That they probably would not be able to exploit, as well as the Browns and then to some extent the Ravens, and certainly the Chargers will try to. So we'll circle back on that in a second. So there's that. Lots of Chiefs news as we get ready for the Browns game. We had 3 wins for those local college teams, including KU's first victory since I think Bill Clinton was president. I think it's been a long time. You get KU beating South Dakota, averaging 2 yards per carry. Not an exaggeration. Their final line before I think they had a couple kneel downs that took it from 2.1 to 2. I watched an excruciating amount of that game. I'm happy for KU fans. I'm happy for KU. I honestly, here's a quick little sidebar to the sidebar. My parents went to Wichita State, and then I went to Mid-America Nazarene. I, honest to God, just want KU and K-State and Mizzou to all be good. I really, that's or really bad, I guess, but I'm really tired of KU being really bad, so I don't want that anymore. At this point, and I've seen all of these teams be kind of irrelevant for decent stretches of recent past, on the national level at least, I really want, if you're listening right now as a collegiate sports fan in this area, I want your team to be good. I really do. It's just more interesting to me, and I don't really have skin in the game. It was tough to watch, but KU got the win 2 yards at a time. We can look ahead to next week maybe a little bit, and it's probably not as rosy for KU. There's this tweet that Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus, a frequent guest on the program, tweeted out saying that Kansas goes from a 6.5-point favorite against Coastal Carolina last year to a 27-point underdog this year.
They did win the time of possession battle, though. Decent amount.
And that's why they won.
Exactly.
I've often said that.
Basically 2 wins.
It should count.
You average 2 yards a run. You hold the ball for 34 minutes.
And you win.
KU's basically 1.75 and a no this year.
And that clears their over-under. I think their over-under was 1.5.
Yeah.
So go cast your bets. So KU wins. K-State beats Stanford handily. Defense was stifling. Final score was 24-7, but that was a late effort by Stanford. It wasn't even really that close. Here's some research for you. Ready for a real humble brag? I was reading a story in the Wichita Eagle online. I didn't drive to Wichita to pick up a paper, that noted this about K-State's defense, and I'm guessing this came up over the course of the broadcast at some point and I missed it, but I noted it in the Eagle, that K-State was running some like 3-3-5 stuff with three defensive linemen, three linebackers, five defensive backs, and showing some looks to Stanford that they apparently just simply were not ready for. And I love a creative defensive play. Not that 3-3-5 is some sort of revolutionary thing. Yeah. If you sit down and talk to our friend Craig Stout of KCSN about Steve Spagnuolo's defense, you're going to find is that every single piece on that defense basically moves like a chess piece, and like six of them are queens. Like, they can just move anywhere all the time. But thought that was interesting, and an excellent win for K-State, so that's nice to see. And then Mizzou ends up beating Central Michigan by 10. Not super impressive, but Central Michigan is not like a dumpster fire team. They're a respectable program. Gabe DeArmond from Power Mizzou. That's right, right? Did I screw up their site name? Thank goodness. I really panicked for a second. Was that obvious? I thought he had a pretty good take in his sort of post-game story about it, that like, hey, Mizzou's not at a point right now where they can just pop on their helmets and go out and, you know, run around backwards and then crush a decent program without having to put much effort into it. And I, you know, if that's maybe a little bit of a damper of what you expect whenever Mizzou has to get into SEC games, do they play Kentucky?
Next week.
It's next week?
Yep.
Oh,
week
wow.
Kentucky-Mizzou.
Oh, wow. Why are you giving thumbs downs, Marco?
Because Rudy is a Kentucky fan, yes?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm a Missouri fan.
Currently, 3.5-point favorites, Kentucky.
I thought you were a KU guy, Marco.
I did, too.
No, I just went to school for the education.
Got it.
Wow, you went to KU and came out a Mizzou fan.
Well, I mean,
no, you're a Mizzou fan going in.
Yeah.
That makes more sense.
If I watch KU play football, I might become a fan of another team as well.
I get it.
It's understandable.
What is that? What was that experience like? Why are you a Mizzou fan? Is it a familial thing or
just that's my dad's team? Right.
Okay.
You know, you're born into it.
Sure.
So there's a player at Mizzou, because I just kind of pulled up the
I don't know they played next week. Oh, that's
very
exciting.
The box score, essentially.
Regardless, Rudy's going to be insufferable.
Yeah. No, I mean,
win, lose, or draw. Can you draw on college football? No. I learned about the new overtime rules last night watching Notre Dame Florida State. I'm so glad that they didn't have to get to that.
If you tie in football, you have to be executed.
And then that happened last night, where Notre Dame Florida State was great. It was great theater. I turned it on just in time. I'm going to butcher some names to everybody, and I'm just sorry. It's just not my first love was never college football, but I'm learning about myself through this.
Brian Kelly.
Not Brian. No, the safety for Notre Dame that went from the far hashes to the opposite sideline. He wears number 14. He took off his helmet and got a penalty, and he shouldn't have.
Kyle Hamilton.
Hamilton. So I turned it on just in time to watch Kyle Hamilton do something genuinely stupendous. Is that not a race car driver also?
Actually, yeah, I think so.
I don't know that it actually is. I think I'm making Kyle Busch and Denny Hamlin the same person or
there
something.
There is a
Which,
Hamilton.
By the way, did you guys see why Denny Hamlin was trending over the weekend?
No.
I think it's Denny Hamlin. Let me make sure I don't slander a man. This first segment's a variety segment today, by the way.
There's a Kyle Hamilton on Twitter. He is a car guy.
Sure. Kyle Larson meets Denny Hamlin, maybe?
There is a Hamilton racer.
Yeah, there was just, you know, so I'm looking at it now, and I'm wondering if it's even worse than I thought it was. I don't know. Denny Hamlin seems like he's got some stuff going on, or maybe he is the stuff going on. There's
Lewis
some bad,
Hamilton.
He's a F1 driver. Okay. There's some stuff going on with Denny Hamlin, it seems like. I don't know. It might be kind of icky. I'm not 100% sure.
Icky stuff in NASCAR? Never.
Never once. How did we get there? So I basically turned that game on just soon enough to see number 14 just quick enough to see Denny Hamlin go far hash to near sideline for a pick. It was an incredible play. And he took off his helmet on the sideline. They threw a flag. And like, look, I think that just generally speaking, that if you do something that cool, you should be allowed to take off your helmet. Yeah. Now, like pass interference, I think it should be subjective. The ref should get to decide, was that cool enough to earn that? Mm-hmm. You know, you get a 3-yard run and a first down in the first quarter of a game or whatever. you can't take your helmet off for that.
No.
You're just, that's just you doing your job. But if you do something that's going to be on a highlight reel for the next 6 months, you should have that freedom. That's my take as commissioner of sport, of all sport.
Wow, he ran a far, far way.
It's a great pick. If anybody didn't see it or wasn't watching that game last night, just go find that pick. Because
he also looks like a linebacker playing safety.
He really does. It was bonkers. But then I was basically hooked on that game from that point forward, even though I think Florida State was down 18 at some point.
Yeah. Fourth quarter.
Nearly had a chance to win it, hit a field goal to tie it. Notre Dame then almost completes a pass to get in the field goal range to win it at the end of regulation. Tight end drops it, and then they go into overtime, and there's all sorts of kicking shenanigans, and eventually Notre Dame wins at all of that.
Mackenzie Milton played in his first college game since 2018?
And I don't know if anybody noticed or not, but good God, nothing can possibly fill Joe Tessitore's heart more than the phrase catastrophic knee injury. Because I tweeted that out, and Alec Lewis of The Athletic responded that he puts like 12 syllables in catastrophic. Mm-hmm. And Tessitore did a great job on that. Somebody else tweeted this, and I'm stealing it from someone, so apologies for wherever I'm stealing it from. But someone was like, honestly, like, he fits college football. He is a great play-by-play voice for big college football games. I think that's, mm-hmm. I think that totally, totally tracks. But within the first, like, 5 minutes, I'm really not exaggerating on this one. Within the first 5 minutes of Mackenzie Milton playing quarterback, he suffered a catastrophic knee injury at UCF. You know, doctors said that he would probably never be able to walk without pain again, mm-hmm. would probably never be able to play football again. Amputation was on the table. I think there was some similar stuff with Teddy Bridgewater's knee injury years ago.
And then he ended up, like, suffers the injury, has surgery, and in the rehab process, it gets infected, and then he immediately has to go in for more surgery, and it's just, it went as poor, you know what I mean? Like, everything went as bad as it could have went at the moment, you know?
And he played last night.
Yeah.
After apparently, he looked really good and really comfortable. How did he not win that job, like, for the start of the season? That would be a question that I would ask privately. Or on the radio. Seems like the evaluation process may have been flawed there. But also, he went in just because the previous quarterback, Jordan Travis, his helmet popped off, and so he had to leave for a play. And Milton came in and never left again. Also, there were some quotes from Jordan Travis after the game, and even like you on the sideline after Milton had a touchdown drive, where he was like, the quarterback that got replaced there was stoked for Mackenzie Milton, which was really cool. Like, mm-hmm. that is some of the stuff that I think a lot of the times people talk about, like, college sports are just more pure and whatever, you know. And I'm still expecting Dabo to resign at some point. He said he was going to as soon as athletes started getting paid.
He's busy on his slide.
Sliding to scoring 3 points in a game at home. Is that what he's sliding into? Because it is. That's exactly what he's sliding into.
If you don't know, Clemson has a slide in their football facilities.
It is weird doing a show for an audience that might not know that. Because if you listen to Almost Entirely Sports, most weeknights on Sports Radio 810, or wherever you get your podcasts, just search for Almost Entirely Sports. Anyone who listens to Almost Entirely Sports on a regular basis knows that Dabo Swinney said that he would quit the day that college athletes started getting paid, knew that there was a slide in Clemson's locker room, and knew the relationship that we have with Dabo Swinney vis-a-vis just sort of the nonsense that he says.
There's also a different show, though. Putt-putt course right outside of the facility.
College boys are just more pure, uncut, raw.
So you can slide from the top of the facility right to the front door. Which apparently Dabo does every day.
And then you can
walk outside.
You can grab a putter on your way down the slide. There's the whole rack of them. You just grab a putter. And it's that's actually the 18th hole also. Yeah. You have to hit it up the slide for the 18th hole. That part might not be true. It almost certainly isn't. But that's never stopped me before.
I think they also have like nap pods. Like in the facility, like a little nap pod area.
Do you think we could get a nap pod like sponsor to install a few of those around here?
What I would do for a nap pod,
because we would be such good advertisers for them, especially for AES, man. I mean, like, look, you know, Rudy's out here crack of dawn to the crack a midnight or whatever.
They have a wiffle ball field, too.
What?
I'm pulling it up right now. Cost $55 million to build. 142,000 square foot facility. Coach's office, team meeting rooms, obviously there's, you know, locker room, 23,000 square foot weight room, you know, the cafeterias, televisions, hydrotherapy. There's a hill.
I think the Clemson football program is going to be okay.
There's a hill and a slide. So, like, I obviously mentioned the slide, there's also a hill. You know, like, part one of Clemson's thing is they walk down the hill into the stadium. Well, there's a mini version of that hill in the facility.
There's a hill in the facility?
Yeah. Barbershop. Yep, nap room. So not nap pause, but we got a nap room with bunk beds.
Oh, there are full curtains that cover that. I was going to say that I really don't.
So it's kind of like a pod, but it's not a pod. Like, so like, I think Google has like actual pods. They're like, they look like a pod.
Yeah.
There's a players lounge that has a bowling alley.
I just need them. I think for a nap pod to be effective for me, I would need to be able to lock it from the inside. Yeah.
They call it the outdoor play area. You can see there's obviously a basketball court and you can see one of the holes of the putt-putt course. Man, this thing's like 4 years old. It's time to build a new one.
Dabo was so indignant.
Players are going to love that village.
They call it a village.
Call it a village.
Clemson has a village for football players.
This is a quote by Turnip Seed.
Who apparently is a real person. No.
I got to go earlier in this story to find the full name of this person.
No. It says, stop it.
Okay. According to Thad Turnip Seed, the school's director of recruiting and
external affairs. That's an Animal Crossing character. Thad Turnipseed is head of recruiting
at Clemson.
His name is Tad Turnipseed.
They've got a fire pit, an outdoor movie theater. It's a 9-hole putt-putt golf course, not a full 18.
Is he a cartoon ball field. Character?
Ooh, the lobby's the building's open for visitors.
I just went to his LinkedIn, and he looks like his name is Thad Turnipseed. I mean that, like, not that I mean that it says that it does. I mean,
he looks like a Thad Turnipseed. Yeah.
Wow, that's outstanding. I love that.
He's now the director of special projects and external affairs for Clemson football, according to his Twitter.
At Thad Clemson.
Yeah.
Really, really.
76 tweets by the man.
It really bothers me. It really. There are several phrases that I've thought about saying that I don't know if I want to say on somebody else's radio show, although God knows the Zona said worse things than what I'm thinking right now.
Huh.
It really bums me out that he's not at Clemson Turnip Seed, because that's even further into mascot land, which is probably why he didn't do it.
There's
like
an article.
Serious businessman or whatever.
On TigerNet.com, so source for Clemson sports information.
Of course.
It's just called the Thad Turnip Seed Files.
Oh, no. Are we going to milkshake duck Thad Turnip Seed? Is it a bad file
or a good file? It's just like, you know, what he said, right? Like opening statement. So like there was an opening statement. I imagine he had this is from 2015. He had a press conference.
It's just whatever you say.
Yeah.
That Turnip Seed Files. Yeah. My first thought is like he said something offensive about some.
No. I think this was just talking about the plans kind of. He also he was asked how does Dabo compare to Nick Saban. Says, I'll stand by it. Best closer I've ever seen. I assume talking about, you know, Dabo.
Yeah, but he's closing doors in the faces of recruits who say, excuse me, Mr. Sweetie. Coach. Can I get a shiny nickel? It's like, no! Have another mini golf course! Go play putt-putt! Don't ask me that question ever again! And he slams the door, and that makes him a closer.
They called the project before the facility was obviously built Clemson Google, because they were trying to basically build the Google facility and Clemson.
And Google, famously, does not pay their employees. I'm Joshua Briscoe. That's Rudy Salazar. Marco Marquez on the other side of the glass. We'll take a break. Scott Chasen next. You're in the zone. Happy Labor Day. I'm not Jason Anderson. Surprise! It is still the zone here, though, on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe filling in. Rudy Salazar on the other side of the console here in studio. Marco Marquez currently hitting all the buttons on the other side of the glass. And we've got, I don't know, a billion things we can talk about here. I also didn't even mention in the first segment as we went to 7,000 different things that Salvador Perez has never, this is a crazy stat, Salvador Perez has never not hit a home run. Ever. Do you know that? Every single at bat, every pitch he's ever seen, he is hit for a home run. I know it doesn't sound quite right, but take my word for it. A reminder,
it's true.
I am Jason Anderson. Let's
we say it on radio. It's a fact.
It's absolutely factual. The second you say it on radio, it is factual. Mm-hmm. Here's my next fact. Is that
at Jason Anderson.
That's not even his Twitter handle. There are numbers in there. And that's J810 Anderson, I think.
Ooh, I think you're right. Yeah.
J810 Anderson. Could be a portmanteau if he wanted it to be.
J810 Anderson.
I know. Here's the fact.
Corey's
next.
At Corey WHB. I know that.
Don't give out Corey's
too.
Twitter handle.
You send your complaints to him.
I had 47 jokes that I just wrote and declined in about 15 seconds, about 0.5 seconds there, and I'm going to go ahead and just keep it moving. I'm going to keep moving is what I'm going to do. You can tweet me, Rudy, and Marco at JB Briscoe at Not That Rudy at Marco Taquito 2. Or you can tweet at Scott Chasen by going at Chasen Scott. It's intuitive enough. Covering all things KU, 24/7 Sports, Fog.net, et cetera, and also waking up early to do this show today. Scott, I know this was tough for you, but I really appreciate you hitting that 10:25 a.m. alarm.
Well, hey, Jason, thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. That was my Jason Anderson impression. I didn't know that I had one, but I just gave it a shot. There are a handful of things that I think are kind of interesting, Scott, about KU's weekend. One is their first victory in 8 years or whatever it was. It wasn't a terribly aesthetically pleasing victory, perhaps. 2 yards per carry is not what I would sign up for. But I don't know. What were you able to take away from that game? If you want to start on one side of the ball or the other, one was obviously looked a little more cohesive in the game.
Yeah, let's start with the offense, because I actually think you bring up something interesting, which is Kansas had an obvious lack of success in the running game, but I think Kansas is different than a lot of teams, because for Kansas to have success this season, it's got to come through doing a lot of the things that are counterintuitive to football, which is slowing the game down, actually, you know, maybe not winning time of possession, but making each drive last as long as possible to help out the defense, limiting the number of possessions in a game, however you can do it, whether it's passing or running, you know, running the play clock down 40 seconds and, you know, having these longer drives to basically expand your variance. Obviously, you know this, but if there are only 10 possessions in a game, the bad team has a better chance of winning compared to if there are 50. Then, you know, the good team is more often than not going to score in a lot of those. So I think Kansas laid a groundwork offensively for some of the concepts it wants to do, especially with the wide zone running scheme. I thought the offensive line had a hard time with that, particularly right guard Colin Grunhardt. He was dealing with an injury. He didn't practice a lot leading up to the game. So I think he gutted through that. Tight end position didn't have great blocking either. And I think it was a little disappointing, just some of the other spots that they were expecting. But I think the reason why they ran so much, specifically wide zone, even when it wasn't working, was to sort of give that game experience, knowing that, you know, it's not just going to be this season. That's going to be Lance Leipold's, you know, kind of running identity when the team does run. So in a way, they were sort of beating their head against the wall for the greater good of the future. But, yeah, I mean, it looked horrible. I think the running backs had something like 25 carries for 30 yards, and if you took away the first carry of the game, it was 24 carries for 23 yards or something like that. So it was a slog to watch at times. It definitely wasn't fun.
So does anything there, I mean, you say, you know, kind of laying the groundwork for the future, and also anyone who's ever heard, you know, me talk about football ever understands how I feel about the time of possession thing. Your point, though, about number of possessions is a valid thing. If you're the worst team, you would like to be able to have you want to have as much randomness as possible, as much variance. You also have to be able to, you know, then finish if you are able to have a long drive that gets to the red zone or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of step two. It feels like KU might just focus on step one for a little bit. But did anything from this game change your expectations of what this team was going to look like? If I would have asked you on Thursday and then asking you today, did anything shift?
Yeah, just because, well, I thought they weren't especially impressive. I actually thought the opportunities were there, especially in the past game, for more big plays. I thought Jason Bean kind of struggled, the quarterback, when he was asked to be sort of this guy going through progressions, picking out the most open guy. And I thought when they simplified it for him, at least that's what it appeared to me in the second half, and basically said, dude, just go to your first read. This is an FBS team versus an FCS team. I thought it created more opportunities. Now, I will tell you, my honorary Scott Chasen, this guy was open all day and didn't get the ball, and I'm sure his parents are angry award, would go to Trevor Cardell. That's an award I give out after every game.
That's great. It's beautiful. The hardware has to be very pricey for that, but I appreciate that you do it.
It's a big trophy. It's, you know, right up there with all the National Player of the Year stuff and whatever. But, yeah, I mean, Kansas had a second tight end who was running wide open all game. Kansas had a second wide receiver who was running wide open all game. And I have to think that as Jason Bean gets more comfortable in this offense, he's going to know to look for those guys and find them, including on the game-winning touchdown. If you see the play, yes, he found Lawrence Arnold, you know, a few yards before the end zone. He turned, he made a guy miss, he got in the end zone, they won. He has a tight end running right down the middle of the field, wide open, between everyone, no one around him by 10 yards, standing in the middle of the end zone. And, you know, he had another guy, Trevor Wilson, the wide receiver. You know, Kansas had like a Sports Center top 10 caliber play, a crazy one-handed catch by the tight end. And same play, wide receivers running straight down the middle of the field between the two safeties, wide open, fastest player on the offense. Again, would have been a surefire touchdown. And so I think once Jason Bean, who was, you know, for all intents and purposes, he was the third quarterback 3 weeks ago. Once he kind of settles into being the guy and understanding this offense and what it all can do, and once Kansas feels more comfortable running more bootleg stuff for him, then I think this offense has a chance to open up. It doesn't really change my expectations for the season because I view Kansas as almost certainly to be a one- or two-win team. I've written that a couple of times. You know, I didn't totally expect zero. I also did, you know, don't really expect three or four. But, you know, it was, I mean, a win is a win, and I think that's the biggest thing for them. However they got it done, they needed a win in this first game.
I think the idea of having Bean on the move more often makes some sense because also, I mean, they read stuff and missing just tight ends that were kind of just open running down the seam on several occasions, just not throwing and missing, but just like not apparently seeing them was an evident problem. But also we talked about the offensive line and the run game. I mean, I wouldn't fault Jason Bean too much for if he was not incredibly confident that he was going to have enough time to work through some progressions. But I don't know. I mean, you sound like you're at least a little bit optimistic that development comes with more development and more comfort in the offense week over week. But again, I mean, as you mentioned, I don't know that we're always talking and grading on a scale for KU football, right? Like, it's not that he'll be able to figure that out in time for their bowl game. It's that he'll figure that out over the course of conference play.
Yeah, well, I think the good news for Kansas is whichever quarterback they had gone with this year, all of them could come back for at least one more year. It's different years for each of them. I think Bean actually has a couple. He might have three. And so you just get in this situation where, you know, it really is a year about development, and that will be frustrating at times. Now, Josh, to flip it, you know, right to the defensive side, their defensive line to me was the most impressive unit, and I couldn't help but leave that game thinking, you know, they lost two of their four starters, or would-be starters, because last year it was three, but now it's four defensive line starters, to SEC programs. And, you know, by all accounts, both guys are standing out and playing well there. You know, that the big takeaway for me was, like, I guess you can't really do this, but it was like, what if Kansas had kept all the guys that lost the transfer? Because Andrew Parchment, he had a touchdown. Stephon Robinson, wide receiver, he had a touchdown, you know, at Florida State and Northwestern, respectively. You know, you lose, I mentioned, two D-line starters to SEC programs. You lose another cornerback to an SEC program. You lose another cornerback to Oregon State, a Pac-12 program. I mean, there is so much talent on that roster that you know, most of it Les Miles brought in, that was lost to other places. And, you know, I found myself watching this last game kind of thinking about what would Kansas's expectations be if it had those guys? And you know, again, you don't get to do that, but I thought there were a few units that were good that would probably go to, like, Big 12 good because, you know, obviously it's easier to be good against an FCS team. But I will say this. I was most impressed with the defensive line. Kyron Johnson is a super senior, the designation given to returning seniors. He's played inside-outside linebacker. He's played kind of a fourth D lineman, but that's what he's playing right now. He's a defensive end. He might be the fastest player on the defense. He's He does not have an NFL defensive end body, but he has a passable college defensive end body. And, you know, he tied for the Kansas team lead in tackles, had a sack with a forced fumble, and is a guy who wants to be a brain surgeon someday. So that gives you a little bit of an idea about who he is. But I thought he had a really impressive game, and I thought Malcolm Lee opposite him did too. So I think if you're looking for reasons for optimism, you got a couple of good safeties, and you got some really good production on that defensive line.
You asked the question and piqued my interest, so I'm going to make you answer it. Like, what do you think the expectations would have looked like in this fictional world where KU is able to keep the guys who transferred out, and in addition to the rest of the moves they're able to make?
Yeah, well, I think it would have looked something like at least 3 wins, at least, right? Because the weapons for whoever the quarterback would be so much better. I mean, you're basically going back to that 2019 season KU had with Carter Stanley, which, side note, it's so funny to think back to that season as like the golden years of football when they won 3 games. But, I mean, let's recall for a moment that season. They didn't just win 3 games. They led Texas with a minute left in the game on the road. They led Iowa State in the fourth quarter on the road. They, you know, were in a 5-point game against Coastal Carolina because they were still having Les Kenning running the offense, which was a mistake given that they scored 48 points the next week after scoring 7 the week before. You know, they lost to West Virginia by 5 points. I'm not saying that team should have been bowl eligible, but that team, if you replay all those results, that team ends up with more than 3 wins. So that had some pieces, and the reason why was you just had so many playmakers. You had Puka Williams. You had Andrew Parchment. You had Stephon Robinson. You had Alabama transfer wide receiver Daylon Charlotte, who emerged as Carter Stanley's kind of go-to late-game target. And then you had some decent guys on defense, too. And I think that, you know, when you look at that team to me reads probably worse to the current iteration of the Jayhawks if they had all those transfers back. Where I think it really would have changed things would have been 2022. I think 2022 you'd be looking at bowl eligibility for Kansas if they had all those guys. Now, some of them would leave because of the super seniors, you know, end up departing. But if you manage to keep people like Marcus Harris and Deshaun Terry and you know, get Caron Prunty, obviously a freshman All-American, and build that out, I think, you know, you could have looked at realistically 4+ wins, and that obviously is pretty close to 6 going into 2022, not 2021. The current season, but they don't have those guys, obviously, so that's just a fun hypothetical, and I guess there's no way ever to prove me wrong unless all of those guys transfer back this offseason, but
it really
did change things.
Yeah,
it'd be a gigantic one.
That's very interesting. So I asked this question again, not with the expectation that the game on Friday changed any of this, but I just don't feel like I've checked in with you on this for a little while. What do you think the actual timeline looks like right now?
Yeah, I think it's still not a huge ways off because, obviously, I think Kansas has talent on the roster now. I think the 85 scholarship number starting next year, that's no longer a problem. I think Kansas has fixed it. So, you know, to me this year, like I said, 1 or 2 wins, I don't think anything crazy. You know, I'm not even sold on next year being anything more than maybe a few, maybe 4, maybe if everything goes well and you keep enough of your guys. The timeline I looked at, and I actually wrote a story about this a little bit ago, is 2023. And the reason why I picked that year is I went through the roster and picked out, I think, 50 players who will still be on the roster in 2023. Now, some of them may leave early. They have a couple of guys, namely their center right now, who, you know, Pro Football Focus graded him when he was at Buffalo as a top 5 center in the nation. So maybe he departs early. Maybe they have a couple guys who don't want to take that super senior year. You know, only 8 guys did last year. So, you know, it's possible that some will, some won't. But I looked at 50 guys who will be on the roster. And the gist of the story was, you've got this 50. You've got 2 years to build around it with transfers, with recruits, with whoever. You know, make it a bowl team. And I think when you look at those guys, and it's a lot of freshmen, a lot of redshirt freshmen, a lot of guys who are playmakers in this game. You know, good examples being Trevor Wilson, who was impressive in the receiving game, L.J. Arnold, who was impressive in the receiving game. You had a couple of redshirt freshmen on the defensive line who really stood out. There are enough pieces there to where if Kansas can avoid major transfer losses, that should be the goal is, hey, 2023, year 3, you know, start trying to get some wins. Now, this is a different world with the transfer portal. I don't know totally how that's going to affect things year over year. I think Kansas is really hoping for a rule change that would allow you to replace scholarship counters based off who you lose via transfer, almost similar to like the compensatory pick thing in the NFL. this idea that if you lose 10 transfers, you may not get 10 extra scholarships to give two transfers, but you might get seven. Hmm. And I think that could really help a program like Kansas, not because of the 85 scholarship number. I think they'll be relatively fine there moving forward. I think the bigger thing is you're going to lose some of your top guys every year, so you need at least a puncher's chance to maybe replace some of them. So just from that perspective, you know, I think 2023 is a reasonable timeline to say, you know, that should be the best season Kansas has had since 2009 when they won five games. Or, you know, so I guess that would be four plus wins. But I don't think it's totally out of the question, just depending, again, on those transfer numbers. If they lose, you know, if they're losing guys every year to transfer, it's going to be longer than that. But if they aren't, if those guys buy into Lance Leipold and stay, you know, year three seems like a reasonable timeline to see something happen.
Last KU question for you. You mentioned that Jason Bean was basically the third stringer, like whatever you said, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that KU named him the starter on, I believe, Wednesday? It was Wednesday or Thursday, playing a game on Friday. And also I would suggest that everyone go read some of Scott's finest journalism about, you know, just choices and maybe including your quarterback a week or so before your first game up on fog.net. You should just go read it. You should go read the story. But how long a leash does Bean have here? Like, how is he the guy? Is he going to be graded on a curve? Is it going to be a long-term development thing? Or could you see a world that, you know, 2 or 3 weeks from now, something else is happening at the quarterback position?
Yeah, well, here's why I think Jason Bean was able to go from third quarterback to first quarterback. I think when Jason Bean, when we got to see him in an open practice, and obviously fans were there too, he was so far behind the other two, Miles Kendrick and Jalen Daniels. And the implication that I got, at least at the practices I was at, which is, you know, most of them, but parts of them, not the whole thing, was that Miles Kendrick was running out in front. Now, Miles Kendrick is the most limited physically. He's the smallest physically, but he doesn't have the best arm. He's not the most mobile guy. Doesn't have this huge track record of success like Jason Bean. And I think at the time, Lance Leipold had said, you know, his goal is to have one guy and stick with him. But if someone's in first and someone else catches him, you know, they're going to give that an honest look. And what I took that to mean was, hey, Miles Kendrick might be in first right now, but we being Kansas coaches, know that there are other quarterbacks on this roster, you know, that have a higher ceiling. I think that was his message, you know, his way of saying it without saying it. You know, at least that's my interpretation. And so I think for a guy like Jason Bean, I expect the Kansas coaches to actually give him a good bit of slack. I think Lance Leipold, the former quarterback, knows that it's hard when you have, you know, guys right behind you and any throw could be your last. I mean, I mentioned that 2019 season when Kansas had that Miles to Go documentary. Well, after the Boston College game, the episode showed that Carter Stanley, who hung 48 points on Boston College, after an interception early in the game, the offensive coordinator who misidentified the read on the RPO then said, we're going to give him one more drive, and then we might pull him. And then, you know, that guy ultimately got replaced a few weeks later. But regardless, that's not the way to handle your quarterbacks, especially so early in a game and so early in the season. So I actually do think Jason Bean gets a ton of slack to just kind of figure things out, because I think they view him as one of the higher ceiling options. I will say the one thing he can do to give it all up would be throw a bunch of interceptions. Kansas had 7 penalties, I think 3 false starts. It was a very sloppy game. I thought the game management left something to be desired, especially with Lance Leipold's timeout usage, which I thought was bad. You know, almost David Beatty bad. But what Kansas did not do, which, you know, a lot of other coaches have, or their teams have, was turn the ball over. Yeah. You know, there weren't a bunch of fumbles and interceptions, and the ball wasn't constantly in jeopardy. And so I think for Lance Leipold, as long as that's the case, Jason Bean gets to continue to kind of play things out and develop and grow.
Last thing, we've got like a minute here. Not only is Scott our resident Kansas Jayhawks expert, he's also our resident expert in all things related to the musical artist Halsey, who had a recent album come out about a week ago. I finally listened to it this morning, Scott, and I did it as homework. I watched the KU game, and I listened to this album as homework to make sure I was ready to have this conversation with you. I enjoyed the Halsey album more than I enjoyed the KU game, but that's just who I am. Can I get a review of If I Can't Have Love, I Want Power, please?
First time I listened to it, didn't love it. I was a little confused. It sounded movie soundtrackish to me. More and more that I've listened to it, the songs I did not like are now my favorite songs, and I think it is the best piece of art in the modern cinematic. Are we calling it that? It was part of a movie, modern everything age, modern
sure.
art.
It's the best piece of art in the modern era, is what you're telling me.
Yes, it should be in the loop, is what I'm saying.
You always are so restrained in your Halsey reviews. I will say this. I have listened to it one time, like 1.1 times, I think, now at this point. And my first listen, I did love it because it sounded like music that I'd listened to off of my iPod in 2008 mixed with other, like, very Halsey things, which I thought was basically produced by Nine Inch Nails, essentially. And that came through in a weird little mashup of genre bending that I was very impressed by. I have not gotten super deep into the concept album angle personally because I did just sort of listen to it once to listen to it, and I'll go back through again with a more fine tooth comb. But I'm in on it. I'm fully in. Louvin
yeah,
all.
Well, I've always said you're not a radio host. You're a god.
Thank you, Scott. I'll talk to you again soon.
Talk to you soon.
There's a song that doesn't matter. I can't. If you didn't get the joke right then, I'm not going to explain it to you. That would be ridiculous. I'm Joshua Briscoe, obviously, because of how that conversation ended. With the help of Rudy Salazar and Marco Marquez, we're filling in for The Zone here on this Labor Day. We'll take a break. Whenever we come back, we'll talk about something else here in, obviously, The Zone.